This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Oregon public and private sector employees, families, and communities. Protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members since 1942. More information at www.OregonAFSCME.com.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. The time is 6:02. And coming up next is we are not going to be having Labor Radio tonight, but we have a special program by Wings on Chicanas, Mexican-American activists of the 1960s. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU, Local 503, whose members seek a just and vibrant society where everyone is treated with dignity and respect, and where all workers have jobs that provide for themselves and their families. You can find them online at SEIU503.org.
Hello, I'm Indu Ramesh from Bangalore, India. My two associates, Rupa and Ramamurthy, are with me. We have come away from the IT capital of the country, all of 160 kilometers, to a semi-rural place. This place is on the edge of dense rainforest, made infamous for harboring a brigand till about 2 years ago. This is Begur, population 7,000. A very backward area till something extraordinary happened here to make the people aware, awake to their needs and to their potential to make a difference.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The music in the background is of rural women singing the prayer song for their deity and also about various activities. This is a self-help group of women who are into microcredit, hygiene, health, awareness of education, etc., etc. There are many groups and many songs. The songs are of change, change for the better, for a new beginning. That is the story of this show. There was a time not very long ago in India when all the young men passing out of the university, especially with a degree in medicine or engineering, wanted to migrate to the US of A. In the beginning, it was for higher studies, and then for not being able to earn the kind of money they would make in the States. Some fell in love and married American girls. Some took their brides from India. Thus grew a large Indian segment of the immigrants in the US. They came home every 2 years, talked about their cars, about their big houses, their children doing very well in schools. They took pity on the relatives who earned nothing like them. The exchange rates made Indian earnings seem very small to them. I guess this has been going on even now.
Sorry, Indu, you seem to have been carried away with your own thoughts, or is it the voice? There are people who are different, and the reason we've come all this way to Begur is to talk about one couple who made that difference. Let us meet Bhagya Ajay Kumar, who went to the US with her husband, Dr. Ajay Kumar, did all the things that you mentioned, but also went to school there to get an education in fine arts. Bhagya, tell us how and when you did go to the US.
I was not looking for a person who was in abroad or anything, but it just happened. My parents met his parents, and this was an arranged marriage. And after meeting him, then talking about sharing some of his values and all, like, then we agreed for the wedding. We got married in 82, and then I joined him in May of 83. And there, of course, I finished my degree in science before leaving from India. And there I was interested in fine arts, and my husband encouraged me. So even before I learned driving, I started attending the painting classes.
Where was this?
This was in Burlington, Iowa. This was a small town. And I used to take some classes there. But eventually I learned to drive, and I started going to University of Iowa, which was about 80 miles from Burlington. So I used to commute, and slowly I finished my degree there. I got a bachelor in fine arts. And then I did for a teacher's license. I did the two-year program. I did that. But meantime, we had family. I had children. I would take care of them. And after I did the teacher's license, and I did substitute teaching for a year. And we decided to move to Boston because of the children's education, and I also could pursue my career. And Dr. Ajay Kumar, he wanted to retire from his son, and we moved to Boston. And there I went to the museum school in Boston, and I did a postbachelor program for a year. And that time my daughter Anjali, she joined high school, and my son also went to school there. And we finished that. Then I applied for the graduate program, and I got into the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, and then we made the big change of me moving there to Chicago.
This decision to come back, was it yours alone, or was it a joint decision?
This was a combined decision. In fact, when we were there in US for all these years, we would make frequent trips to India, and every time we came to India, we would be involved in these projects. And we would also bring our children so that they get exposed to the Indian culture.
Bhagya, the intention to help the people here had already taken root even before you came to India. How difficult was it to make the choice ultimately, you know, staying there and doing your bit to help the communities here is one thing. Why did you choose this particular area? What was it like when you started your work here?
Basically, we would make trips to India. We'd come to Bangalore initially because our relatives were there. Our parents were there. So we would come, and we'd make a trip to Mysore. And we just said, okay, initially we did the Bharat Cancer Hospital. So that one we said we'll do it in Mysore because there was not a cancer hospital in Mysore, so we decided to do that. After that, we started the ISDA program, and eventually that led to the other projects.
But why this particular area, the Begur and surrounding area?
Those areas we did, initially we did health camps. When we did the health camps, and when we got the statistics of the malnourishment of children, of women, and all, then we have conducted more health camps, and then we said, okay, we saw that there was this, economic was a key for all the women, and they to take care of themselves, of their family, everything. That's when we started these programs. Basically, we started projects in Begur because there 95% of the people were based on agriculture, and this was also a drought-prone area. So initially, they depended on agriculture, and they had to. So that was the main this one. So there we saw potential for where the women with these programs. If we introduced these programs, we saw potential for them.
Let us talk about the self-help groups. Today we think of microcredit and cooperation among villagers. It has even brought a Nobel Prize, Peace Prize to Muhammad Yunus from the neighboring Bangladesh. There are women in the background who are talking about their own sangha, their own group, and discussing the programs of the group. You tell us about small saving and how it has changed the woman in the rural area.
Yeah, through the microcredit, I see, I've been visiting the villages, and I see women, how they're becoming more self-empowered. Initially, they would take loans for whatever they, because we don't want to disrupt their village culture, so we encourage them in whatever field they are doing. Suppose, say, they are rearing cattle, have cows for sell milk. So they find, through the microcredit system, we give them loans so that they can purchase the animals, and then they are able to repay them. So that they have done it successfully so far. And other things is like, even for agriculture, if they need some supplies for agriculture, and they can take it through the loans, and they have been successfully, they have been able to return the loans and also do their savings. With the microcredit system, they are like, before they would borrow money from the zamindars and they would pay interest. But now with these sanghas, instead of paying an interest, they're putting their savings, and they're able to stand on their own.
You are now listening to Indu speak to some women who are active members of the self-help group. Sumitra didn't know a thing about savings. She says, if I had a few extra rupees on hand, I would just spend it on food. I never thought about saving it for the future. The self-help group encouraged me to save my money. I no longer go to the money lender. I don't have to worry about surety. The banking process, which was unfamiliar, is a familiar one now. I make papads at home. I employ about 5 to 6 people with me, and I pay them as well. I have a regular market through the self-help groups where I sell my papads. The money I earn is useful to run the family, support the children's education, as well as make a secure future for my family. I plan to buy a property in the future. Earlier, I was very hesitant to go to the money lender. One went with a fear of paying heavy rates of interest. But now it's a thing of the past. I borrow from the self-help group, and I'm able to plan my future. Devamani says, I had a shop. I had borrowed heavily from the money lender. I used to sell bangles from the shop. But now, with the money that I have borrowed from the self-help groups, I sell bangles from village to village. All my family members are also involved in the same trade. Mahadevamma says, I used to work in the fields as a daily wage earner. I now have borrowed from the self-help group, and I sell snacks. These snacks are bought by people who are daily wage earners, who go to the fields early in the morning and have no time to cook. I do good business, and I'm able to support my children's education with the money I make. Timmamma says, I was confined to the four walls of my house. Today, with the money I earn, I fly like a free bird. Timmamma cooks for people. A lot of people buy snacks from her. These are people who again go to the fields and earn their livelihood. Timmamma says, I'm running my business. Earlier, I didn't have enough to eat. But with the business doing well, I'm able to eat well, educate my children, and save some money for the future as well. Dhanalakshmi is another woman who's an active member of the self-help group. She was trained as a tailor. She now helps other women in the self-help group to be trained in the same skill.
There are a number of young people from the United States coming here to work with the villagers, or maybe even to just see a typical Indian village. They live in the rural houses and maybe learn something from them. They've all gone home for Christmas now, but we found Anjali here. Anjali, please tell us what they have found and how they work and how you have been involved in this work. And where do you live in the States?
I live in Chicago, and I come to India twice a year, and I work with IHDUA a lot. I teach at the school, the village school. I teach English for mostly 8th through 10th grade. The last year I was here, I go a lot to the rural villages, and I work a lot with the women. Last year I was here, I was thinking of how so many students that I know, and I myself have gone to Spain, done internship programs in Spain and Italy, and how students are so intrigued by learning about other cultures and other societies, and how there's so many students that really want to, you know, have a useful vacation. They want to come for Christmas or summer and do things that are useful, that help the communities, and also provides them with a great learning experience where they can experience a total different culture, languages. Last year, we had a group called Global Roots that came. They were high school students that came. They lived in the villages. They enjoyed their stay. They learned some Kannada. They helped build a community center. And they really worked along with the villagers. And the villagers are also amazed at how, you know, hardworking they were, everything. That experience I'm working at right now to provide an internship so students can come to India and work, whether they stay in the urbanized like Mysore and go out to the villages, or even live in the villages. They can work with like pre-med if they're pre-med majors, or education majors, or basically anything that they're interested in. Like this, with IHDUA, they can kind of do what they want to, you know, also help them with their majors or what they want to become in life, as well as getting an experience.
Bhagya, with all the work in the villages and all, you also started a school where I believe you are teaching also. And they tell me that you are not that soft-spoken person in the school. So tell us about the school and how are the girl students doing there? How many girl children are there and how are they doing?
The school, this one is in a village called Mullur. The school, we call it Vinayaka Gnana Vidyashale. It's about 20 kilometers from Mysore. And here there are about 400 students. And we have classes from LKG to 10th. And we have students there. And they are girl students. More than 60% are girls. And I see a change in them. They are eager to learn. From when we started the school to now, I see that they are more disciplined in coming to the school. And even the parents are also supporting it. They are sending their children to school. There was actually in the school, and this was in Mullur and Gopalpura, and the students were coming, and initially, like in some surrounding villages, they were not sending the girls to school because they didn't have the bus service. So again, we put in a petition and we have the bus service. So now we have more students coming from the surrounding villages, especially girls, they are coming. And we have like, after they finish the 10th standard, we took some students to our nursing program. And that has been very successful. And more people want to send them for nursing.
How nursing as a profession is a long training, about 4 years they have to train. Yes. But is it that kind of training you are giving for working in the hospital or in their own villages?
We are training these nurses to work in the hospital. In fact, they are trained in our hospital, in Bharat Cancer Hospital, and we also train them in Bangalore Hospital. And now from past 2 years, we have had 140 nurses, and they are working, you know, like around in Mysore and in some of the hospitals in Mysore, and some are in our hospital. And recently, we started taking new batch of students, and they are undergoing training now.
Do the nurses go back to the village to work there as dais or something?
These nurses, we are training them to work in the hospital, so they eventually they stay in the cities. But we have, with this rural program we have in Begur and all, we have this created these dais, and we are...
That is the midwife.
Yeah, the midwife, and we have taught them about five concepts that they need to follow. One is like they, you know, before they would not have clean hands, and they would go immediately and assist in delivery. So now we have trained them, so they have You know, we give them soap so they have clean hands and towel. And we also give them a sheet for the delivery. And then we give them disposable blades to cut the cords. And also, like, to tie the umbilical cord, we give them a twine. And so these things have helped them, and now they're able to assist in their deliveries. Yeah.
Do you think this kind of a training has helped in curtailing infant mortality?
Yes, definitely it has. And people are aware of this, and they call upon these dais to come and help them. Now, through creating these midwives in the villages, now this infant mortality rate has come down from 105 per thousand to 52 per thousand. It has come down dramatically. Yeah.
What happened to the midwife who used to work? Were there any midwives at all in the, or is it the old woman in the house who used to deliver the babies earlier?
The earlier midwives, either if they have come in contact with our the program, they have learned the new ways. So even they have continued their profession. It's not like we have taken away their profession, but with more knowledge and education, they are doing it much cleaner way.
Are you happy with the way the villages are going? You know, change comes into every life, every way. Are you happy? I also found that you are helping them in their kitchen garden. What is the idea of making them grow plants around their small houses? As it is, the patch of land is not much there to have a garden. But I found that whatever place is there, they are growing nice little gardens. What is this kitchen garden program?
Now, in the villages, we have taught people how they can retain water and they can make use of the surrounding, keep the surrounding clean. And one example of this is the village Chikundi, where I visited it several times, and I see the village where, you know, like it looks cleaner, fresher every time I visit. Now, here we have programs for them. Before, there was a high rate of this anemic, and 68% for 40,000. But now we have introduced these programs where we provide them plants. Like we emphasize on giving them five plants to each household. And these five plants, namely, they are like papaya, which is good, vitamin A, and drumstick and curry leaf, that which give them iron, and also this lime, which will give them vitamin C, and also we have another coconut. So these we are providing to the households and teaching them how they can, even with their small patch, how they can, before they, it would be like more, it would be filled with filth. And now they are cleaning and they're keeping the premises clean, and they also feel good about it, and they are proud to come and say that we have grown these in our garden, and they share it with us here.
Rupa, I think it is time to bring in Anjali again here. You wanted to ask her a question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just would like to request Anjali to sum up all the activities of IHDUA and the interconnectedness of each activity with the others.
Well, IHDUA has many different aspects that obviously connect. Personally, I think that when children education combined with women's empowerment exceeds, basically improves the whole village, improves the family, improves the community, and ultimately improves them educationally and economically. As far as the school, I've taught in Spain and I've taught in India. The children are just as eager everywhere to learn. There's no difference between urban or rural or different countries when it comes to children's education. They're just as eager to learn, and they're what will bring the future. Once you teach them at a young age of hygiene, of health, of women and men equalities, those things automatically will come while they grow older. They will think about these things. As far as like the children that you see educated, and when you're talking to women in the villages, there's an obvious connection when women, like as when they're becoming economically empowered, they use that money to buy school books for the children, uniforms for the children, pens. I mean, simple things that they couldn't provide before, they're now able to provide. What was happening before, in many cases, was that men were making the income. If they had excess money that they had, they could spend. It was usually spent in entertainment, such as drinking or just buying things that didn't help for the future. Women, on the other hand, they save their money, they use it for books. They've repeatedly told us that they spend it on books, the things that the children will need for education. And also, when they become more economically, they don't have to depend on girls at home to like come and do chores around the house. So girls are allowed to go to school. And this will help ultimately. As you see, like, compared to 5 years ago to now, villages that have had sanghas, that have had IHUA's help, more children go to school. There's more and more parents want to send their children to school, especially women putting their foot down and saying their children have to go to school. I will help provide these things, help in the long run. Also, educating these women about health, all these things, help with the children's nutrition, you know, learning the things that they can take, growing the things that they can grow at home, and providing it for the children. Everything that helps their family, helps their community.
We have a couple here from the U.S., and they are working very closely with Dr. Ajay Kumar and IHDUA. I request them to share their experiences. Please introduce yourself and share your experience of working with IHDUA.
My name is Donna Slepak, and I'm primarily teaching English at the rural school.
Tell us a little more about your experience in working in India.
Well, in terms of the women's microloan project, our first observation was made in a rural village in Andhra Pradesh, and it was really quite inspiring to see how the loans had transformed their lives and made significant changes just in simple ways. Like, there was one elderly couple, they were so grateful for the loan because it enabled them to run a shop selling just, you know, a few staples, and in lieu of working so hard in the fields because as they were aging. And the other thing that most of the women in that village, and also in AJ's village, one thing that was repeatedly said is how these loans have enabled them to provide for their children or grandchildren and let them go, allow them to go to school. That was a real significant change in their lives. And one thing that really impressed me when we went out with Manjama in AJ's rural villages is the solidarity the women had, that they were out of isolation, that they had contact with each other and were mutually supportive of each other. And they expressed a lot of appreciation for that.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Rupa, I think we have seen another face of rural India. Rural India meant poverty. Rural India meant small landholdings. Rural India meant people just not being able to cope. Today, just the women of this village have shown us how much they can do and what they can do.
I agree with you, Vindu. Coming to this small rural village of Bekur in rural Karnataka has been a wonderful and a learning experience. The women indeed have shown that a small little effort in savings and in planning goes a long way in supporting the family as well as educating their children.
It is late afternoon now, and the villagers are returning to their routine work. We are also on our way back to Bangalore. As we move away from the village, with the sun setting in brilliant yellows and oranges, we can hear them starting their singing of group songs and devotional music all over again. The cattle coming home, and children from their schools, and the men and women have their hands full of work, and they want it that way. They have found a new meaning to their life, and life is a little better, more meaningful, and happy for them. We say goodbye and head home. This is Indu, Indu Ramesh, with Ramamurthy and Rupa signing off from Bangalore, India.
Our email is wings@wings.org. Website, www.wings.org. The Wings Sound logo is from Livana's album, A Circle Is Cast. Special thanks to Suzette Cullen and to Genevieve Vaughn, author of 36 Steps to a Gift Economy. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The time is 6:32, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7, and that was a special program from the Women's International News Gathering Service about a rural community that had been transformed by an Indian couple who returned from the U.S. bringing new ideas about money, health, and education. This KBU program has been made possible in part by KBU Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Online information at ubc156.org. And up next is Prison Pipeline.
Voices from the Edge will be interviewing Paul Gorski on white privilege and racism on Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Tune in to listen to the interview regarding race, privilege, anti-racism, anti-poverty activism, education, women's rights, immigrants' rights, and more. That's Voices from the Edge, this Thursday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., only on KBOO Portland.
Understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul.